welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Chris, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
Scott, how are we?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. It's a pleasure to see you.
When was the last time we did this?
Do you know what? I don't even know. A long time ago.
Four years?
It must be.
Have I gone longer than that?
Yeah.
Was I at Wickham when we did this?
It was like early on, maybe one of the in the first half a dozen or so. So I'll link back into the podcast that you did.
I reckon 4 years. I think we did it when I just left.
Yeah, I think you just left.
Because I remember lots of my conversations were in the past tense about when we did this at Wickham and stuff like that. So I think that would have been when I was doing my part-time stuff before FFC started. So, yeah, 4 years. Back off the subs bench after 4 years. That's just about right.
Well, the problem is we speak a bit in between. So, like, you know, it's not like I don't get to speak to you. Some guests I don't get to speak to at all. When it's only on the podcast, I actually get chats. And with you, we get the odd conversation here and there. And it's always a pleasure. You know, look, I'll say it from the outset. I'm a massive fan of everything you've done historically, what you currently do, how you go about your business and, you know, your reputation procedure in a really positive way. So not just me, but always when I speak to parents that have their kids with you, you know, you're much loved by not just the kids, but the parents as well. So having someone like you on the podcast is a massive blessing for us. But also, you know, I really value your opinion. I know we've got a topic that's close to your heart today to discuss. We're going to try and keep the friendly Chris and the positive Chris. But I know that, let's be honest, we spoke very briefly before we hit record that, you know, sometimes being all nice and being friendly and being compliant is all well and good because we work with kids and we want to, you know, we want to encourage a positive environment and a positive atmosphere. But actually also sometimes I think we've got to push back and challenge a bit harder. And that's me here as well. I'm, you know, I can say all the nice things and try and say all the right things, but sometimes I don't think we push hard enough on some of the stuff that we actually believe in is important if we want to keep, you know, the positive side of grassroots football going. So I'm going to sense that some of this conversation is going to be around then. We might push a few boundaries on this, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But just before we do, Chris, for those that haven't heard your previous episode or know you personally, just a quick overview of kind of who you are, what it is you do. You know, any bit about background?
Well, I'm Chris Fraser. I'm a Gemini. I'm 6'2". I'm Scottish. I ran my own business for the last 5 years. It was FFC's fifth birthday about a couple of weeks ago. So I've managed to unbelievably run a business on my own for 5 years. That was after a long 10-year stint at the mighty Wickham Wanderers, helping set up the EDA, which is now fully functioning and flying. And I understand that academy football is on the doorstep, which is an amazing opportunity for the boys. You know, I think we've spoken about it over the years, haven't we? I wonder if it will ever happen. I understand investment's gone in at WWFC, and I think they've got a manager in place to kind of see it and oversee it. You've probably got more information on it than I have, but I've just been keeping an eye on the WWFC Foundation websites, etc., and seeing that the academy is probably in place for certainly the next year to start, which is an amazing opportunity. Certainly, hopefully, one that your lad will benefit from. So I moved away from that because I just wanted a fresh start, a new purpose, and kind of work for myself. I'm a self-confessed control freak, so working for my own business where I'm the CEO, the physio, the welfare officer, all of the above. So multitasking of a whole new level. So yeah, it's my fifth year and I love it as much as I did before. I've got 160 players playing in my academy from under sevens all the way through to under 13s. JPL, we play under eights all the way through to under 11s. So I've got seven teams that I run on a Saturday. So so in terms of commenting on this, I see seven games every Saturday from both sides of the touchline, whether it's coaches, whether it's parents. So and that's kind of where the last 4 or 5 weeks where the season has started, my thoughts process on what we're actually going to discuss has just heightened my concerns, my want to change it as maybe just heightened by my experiences over the last five years and stuff. So nine sessions a week, Monday to Friday. Got three sessions tonight. And listen, I'm doing a hobby and getting paid for it, so I'm not going to grumble. Not yet, anyway. No.
All right, brilliant. Well, great introduction. Thank you for that. Chris, congratulations on the 5 years. That has flown by.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't believe it.
Unbelievable. And obviously that would have included going through the COVID time and the pandemic there. So, you know, never an easy time for anyone to get through that, you know, especially when
Mum and dad hated it. We were doing sessions in the living room. They were hating it. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, what I don't want to do is encroach too much on the actual big conversation we're going to get to, but just for you, kind of what's changed or developed for you since we last spoke? So, anything that's without getting into, the nuts and bolts we're going to chat about on the actual podcast, but for you and obviously with the academy, anything that's changed or has it been pretty much as you thought when it's just kind of evolved naturally over the 5 years?
Yeah, I tell you what has changed, mate, and it's what I think the academies are looking for in players. When you and I first probably had this conversation, academies were all about boys who could dribble the ball and be 1v1 dominant, etc. But I certainly get a sense. I bumped into a few of the scouts on my travels, and when I go to the summer tournaments, we have conversations on the side. I think the academies are looking for different players now. Certainly, maybe, the 6 and 7 year olds are certainly looking for lads who can still beat a player, have got speed, 1v1 dominant, attacking and defending, etc. But I think academies are looking for boys who make good decisions now. And that's definitely changed from when we first started 5 years ago. They want boys who can make good decisions. And again, some people have said that Pep's ruined the game. And I guess he kind of has. Is he listening? Is he on? I think Pep's changed the game into a game for boys who can control it, pass it. And what's Roy Keane's phrase? Can I run? Can I pass it? And can I control it? And that's kind of what I've. And again, have I come away from what I should be doing? I'm not quite sure. So I'm in a little bit of a quandary in terms of what as coaches we should be doing. Should I be putting on a session where every kid has a ball and we just do 1v1 dominant stuff from 5 o'clock till 6:30? But I find myself kind of steering towards getting my boys to make good decisions, working on their first touch to the point where their second touch is a game changer. That's kind of the phrase I've been using to kind of sum it up in, if that makes sense. I don't know your thoughts on it, but I certainly think the conversations I'm having with the academies is that I think they've changed their track, that they're not looking for the dribblers anymore. Because I can count on one hand the amount of boys, so the amount of first team players in the Premier League, World Cups, etc., who actually dribble the ball. We look at that Spanish lad, that 16-year-old. He's not a dribbler.
No,
He just makes really
let him
good
go.
decisions, and he's
Let him go,
dynamic, and he's
mate.
good on the
Yeah.
ball, and he can beat a player. But 9 times out of 10, he shares it and he makes good decisions. And that's a 16-year-old who's lighting up the world of football right now. And the way I look at it, if we're going to get these boys to buy into what we do, you need to get your lads to trust you first and foremost. And I don't think I can do that without leaning on the likes of Lamal and Messi and Ronaldo, etc., and stuff like that as their role models and their heroes, if that makes sense. So,
Yeah.
I certainly think football's changed, but for the good or for the bad, I'm not quite sure, because football's definitely different to what it was. You don't see wow moments as much as you and I would have did, when Zidane was on the scene and, early
Yeah.
Ronaldo compared to this Ronaldo. He just keeps it simple, moves it, and then gets in the box and heads it in, if that makes sense. So I don't think football's as exciting as it used to be. That's probably my way of summing it up. I don't know your thoughts.
No, I agree, Chris. I think what you see now looking at the younger age groups compared to maybe 5 years ago when it was pretty much stay on the ball, beat players, and just good kids just doing what they can do. I think it's become a bit more adult-fied, isn't it? Even at 5 and 7-a-side football
Yeah,
where,
it's more
they're
tactical
getting
even
it,
at
moving,
7 and 8.
yeah. So when I don't like, I guess philosophically, you want to be good on the ball first, and there's that win opportunity to, hone those kind of really good ball manipulation skills and all those things. What I've noticed with the older boys, though, to contrary to that a little bit, is they've gone back to looking at physicality. The scouts will come down and watch a game, and it'll be the three biggest lads on the team. They always will, guaranteed, always. And obviously, the players better, and they're not bad players. They're great, but they're not necessarily the most game intelligent
But
player. They're
what a
not so
shame.
technically strong.
Yeah.
I feel it's gone back that way a little bit. They're all decent players. They're all good. So it's not like one's better or worse, but actually, the physical ones are the ones that early maturation, the ones that have gone through maybe adolescence a bit earlier. Sharp. I don't know that the scouts see part. Well, not all the scouts necessarily see past that. But I guess it depends, A, on what the academy's looking for, right? And the scout should be that window for what the academy wants, not necessarily what the scout wants, but what the academy's looking for. And you'd hope that given the vast array of academies out there, that you'd have some that maybe don't mind physicality, others want good decision makers, others want technical players. And hopefully that way there's a window for everybody. But it just feel like it's gone back a little bit towards physicality more than anything else for
Yeah, I'm
the
not sure the little
academies.
number 10 plays in your midfield is
No.
he gets one look at if that, and then like I said, his big lad that's next to him, who's basically broken up play and given him the ball when he set up the goal, he's the one that gets gets the attraction. I think they look at it and go, you know what, if he's got physicality and he's got speed, we can teach him the rest with our four sessions a week and our games at the weekend. The
Yeah.
little lad in midfield will never be big and strong. But listen, Paul Scholes wouldn't have made a footballer that
No,
way.
exactly.
One of the
Yeah.
greatest footballers that's ever played in this country, and he would have been very much missed out if I think if the mindset of the current scouts and football clubs ran this at this time, he would have been gone and done something else, which would have been a tragedy because he was a genius.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, fantastic. Brilliant. Thank you for that. Well, okay, again, without us getting into the real conversation, just more generally, outside of just the work you're doing at Fraser Academy, what about just grassroots football more broadly? How has that changed over the last 5 to 10 years?
I just think winning's become really important. And that's probably the first point in the conversation that we kind of had regarding this podcast. I think it's all about that. It's all about how many wins we can get and you know, our under sevens are undefeated since Christmas and we're on a 9-match winning run and we scored 970 goals and only conceded two and it's just everything that development isn't. And I sound like a broken record and I sound like I'm, you know, there's times where I have conversations with people and I get the impression they're just thinking, yeah, because you haven't won, you're using as an excuse that you're developing your kids rather than winning football matches. But it's really difficult to develop your kids and win football matches. Certainly, I mean, you've had the experience in the JPL this year. You know, if it's very difficult to play your lads out in different positions and be successful. You know, if for example, if I said to you, right, I'm going to run your team at the weekend. I'm going to play Marcus at left back against the strongest team in the league. Very difficult afternoon for Marcus, but he's going to come home and he's learnt bundles, hasn't he? Have you won the football match? Because Marcus is playing against a right winger who can run the 100 meters in 8.4 seconds, whatever it is, and it's a difficult afternoon for him. But my God, has he learnt something? Is that or not? Is that not our jobs? But at the same time, JPL, if you lose a game or two, you're out the running. So it's different. I mean, that's a JPL conversation for another day. But I kind of joined the JPL on the view that we were actually developing players in a competitive environment. That was one of what was sold to me. But if you don't lose, if like I said, I've had a couple of games this year where they've been called development friendly. So I've left out two or three of my stronger boys to give some of the other lads a go with a view to so we start competitive this Saturday. So I've left a few boys out and played some other ones just to kind of get them ready, if that makes sense, or see if they're good enough. And we've lost those football matches. And now we've been put in a weaker group because of that. So now all of a sudden, my boys will probably be too strong for the group they're playing in because I've brought the big guns back in. That's another
It's
story for another day.
bizarre.
But again, because it's just not development. And this isn't, is this a JPL conversation? It's probably not. It's kind of grassroots as well. I mean, the biggest thing in grassroots is why are we not streaming? Is beyond me. And I know the streaming conversation and I've heard the streaming conversation, the pros and the negatives, but people keep telling me that having three strong players with three or four weaker ones brings the weaker ones on. And there's nothing in my head that tells me that that's the case. It's the opposite. They become scapegoats. They don't get trusted. I think that's what causes a lot of problems with the parents. The parents suddenly realize that there's three good players and three strong ones. And I know what they're doing in terms of numbers. They don't want teams to fold. So if you and I ran a team and we had eight players each and we played one, like they did at under sevens, if you remember, you play seven, six or seven aside on one pitch and I play on the other ones and then we swap over. So in terms of numbers, but is it a numbers game? Should it be a numbers game? Or are we trying to get kids to play football and develop at a good level? So I know streaming is controversial because it's telling some kids that they're better than others, if that makes sense. But is that not what happens at school in maths and English and science, etc.? So I don't really know. And football it's a colossal enterprise. I mean, it's bigger than anything in this country. I think football is probably the biggest thing in this country, and that's probably a controversial thing for me to say. But it means a lot to so many people. But I just don't think we've got the structure right. And if it means we go a little bit elitist a little bit early. I can't tell you the amount of times I've gone and watched under sevens and eights games, and there's two lads on the pitch who are head and shoulders above the others, and other lads who I'm not going to call them weaker. They're just less. They just haven't got the experience. The two lads are flying. They play 4 or 5 hours a week. The other lads play half an hour at best. Probably don't really want to be there. But surely there must come a stage where we can be brave enough and bold enough. And if the FA, and again, I'll please the guys, if the FA make the decision and take it out of our hands as if to say, right, we're going to stream from under sevens at Christmas. So play your sevens games from September to December. And then at Christmas, we will stream. And that streaming situation happens. And the FA have decided that that happens. So you and I don't get it in the net because we've gone, right, we're bored of little Jimmy letting the ball run under his foot at right back and us conceding goals. If the FA put that in place, then I like to think that we can stream and not to let, because I don't want rubbish players on the pitch. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying if we can have the best players playing against the best players, so we have a fantastic game. And more importantly, the weaker, less experienced ones playing. So they get to take a throw in, they get to take a corner, they get to take a penalty. When is that young lad, when's little Bobby going to get to take a penalty? When is he not going to get less? When is he not going to get taken off after 5 minutes because the ball's gone in the net and the coach has to take him off because he needs to put his best player back on? And you and I both know, you've probably seen that happen time and I've seen it happen time and time again. A team is winning well and all of a sudden he puts on the three less experienced ones and all of a sudden it's 3-3 after 20 minutes. And guess who gets hooked at half time? The three lads who should be getting their game time. And I just think it would just take a lot of animosity away from the parents who are very, very supportive, most of them, but there are some who just want to win football matches. And is that driven by the kid? If you ask Marcus, what does he want to do? Does he want to develop or does he want to win? I'm not sure what his answer would be, but he'd probably say he wants to win.
But Chris, right on that. So I'm going to jump in if that's okay, because
Yeah, of
you
course.
cover loads of
I do
ground.
rant, mate.
I
I
woke
apologize.
the beast here, and I want us to make sure we unpick some of this stuff before we go past it and give a chance to visit some other areas you want to talk about as well. So here you mentioned winning and streaming as the first two things. So maybe we'll take a look at those in a bit more detail. And you said about, okay, what would a player want to do? Maybe they don't want to win or they want to develop. For me, our challenge surely is to try and do both, isn't it? Like, as coaches, it's to try and do both, and to try and take the players and the parents and everyone else with us on that journey to try and do both. Win, I guess when I say win as well, let's define what winning means. That doesn't necessarily mean winning the result of a game. It means improving, it means getting better, it means having challenges. That the result can be part of winning, but it's part of winning. The actual scoreline, I mean specifically. So if we play today and you beat us 3-2, the result is yours. You've won the game 3-2. But there's other ways in which we may have won. We might have played you 2 seasons ago and lost you 10-0. So we've close the gap on that result a little bit. We may have our players have played better performances. So I guess it's how you position winning as well to what that actually means beyond just the result. But the result inevitably is going to be part of that. But I think winning football matches isn't that hard. I'm quite comfortable that I will win lots of games or lots of games this season by doing lots of the wrong things, And by that, I mean just playing stronger players, just playing fixed positions, being a bit direct at time, encouraging my linesman to make sure that anything that's a bit close is waved offside, shouting at the ref during games to get intimidate him a little bit, so he gets on my side a little bit, make sure my parents are very loud and boisterous from the other side of the pitch, take decisions out of my players' heads and tell them what they must do at all times. Make
Joysticker,
training, make training. So there's loads that I can do to help, and I can win games. Look, will we win the top, the national final of the JPL or the County Cup? I don't know, but we'd be very close by doing all those things, But that's to me, that's not what I want to try and win is by still winning the National Cup and the County Cup and that kind of stuff, but actually giving players ownership by doing a bit of rotation at the right time, by not convincing our linesmen to cheat, by not convincing that we're shouting at the ref to try and intimidate them, by not just playing players in one position, by not going direct, but sticking to our values the way we want to play our football. And I'm not saying going direct is an issue. I'm not saying that's the problem either. That's up to you. But by being true to what you believe in. But I don't know whether the adults, sometimes that can be parents, opposition, whatever else, would that around a lot of them don't see that. They just want to see the result be favorable to them. Is that your take on it?
Do you feel pressure in winning football matches?
Absolutely. Well, absolutely.
And
I
where does
find
that
it
pressure come?
peripheral.
Does that pressure come from your parents? Because for me, again, if a team's not winning, the best two players, they go and play for the team. Is the amount of times that I see someone's finished second or third, and then I hear, "Oh yeah, Jimmy's left the team. Oh, where's he gone? Oh, he's gone to the team that won the league."
Absolutely. And the challenge, I think, Chris, is, and I know we come from a similar place on this. And over the last few years, what I've tried to do is keep the players that we've got first and foremost. But as the format grows, you have to add players in. But I've never gone out scouting for players. I've never approached a player. But what you hope is good players would come to you because of the environment you've created, not because actually you might have won a few competitions, whatever else. And I think I know that you've achieved that. I think I've got close to that as well. But that's not the norm, is it? That's not the norm. Most players and parents, well, parents will take players to a team that's winning and just results focused without actually asking the questions. Okay, how did you get that result? How did you become the County Cup champions? How did you do that? What's your philosophy? Because there's lots of teams that win these competitions that I wouldn't want my kid to be part of the respect because, it's very player, it's very coach centered, it's very cutthroat, it's very,
But do you not find it difficult to stick to, and this is where I'm not struggling this year, but finding it very difficult. I almost feel like I'm trying to do the right thing and I'm trying to play boys out of positions, but then the other eight teams that you're playing against
won't do it.
won't do it. And you
No.
almost feel like you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. I had that, the silent weekend that they do. I did it last year and I decided to stay quiet. It was coaches, we were allowed to speak, but I was quiet. And one of the parents came over to me at half time. I think we were 2-1 down, but 3-2 down, whatever it was. And one of the parents ran over to me and said, "Chris, you do realize you can coach today?" And I kind of thought, "Yeah, but
I'm abiding by this.
I'm using this opportunity for me to,
See what the players are about. What can they make their
give
own
the
mind
boys a
up
little
and
bit of
stuff."
a license, if that makes sense. Because you and I both know if we joystick these kids for 8 weeks, what happens when you're not stood on the sidelines? And that's why I kind of want to, the message I put on Facebook regarding a coach can talk at the start, can talk in the middle, and talk at the end. And other than that, turn up and shut up, if that makes sense. And that sounds like and we're here to make the kids better. And I just don't think we're making kids better by, like you said, absolutely joysticking the life out of it. Who's it for? If you and I did that, who's it for? It's for our own egos, if that makes sense. And that's difficult. But again, if you don't win, you lose your best players. And rivalries build up. Of course they do. The amount of times where you play against a fellow coach and he gets the better of you 4 or 5 times, and all of a sudden you start getting the better of him. Then all of a sudden his high mate becomes high Chris. If that makes sense. You know what? Yeah, it happens. I've had some lovely relationships, bonds with some coaches when they've been putting 3 or 4 goals past my team, and then all of a sudden we've developed and we've got better and we've become more competitive, and then all of a sudden we've got our upper hand, and all of a sudden that high five at the gate becomes
Don't
a
like it anymore, do
yeah
they? No.
it walk, the walk past and the no eye contact, and that's really difficult. I find that really difficult.
Well, I want to come back to that as well, because I guess there's a word here that, again, and I don't want to put everyone down, but I think there's a kind of common problem to this. So we'll come back to that. But the other point you said about streaming as well, again, it relates back to the bigger problem. But like anything done rightly, it should be a massive tool, an opportunity, mustn't it? I mean, all you're saying is a particular player at this moment in time should be at this particular level. And that's not a reflection of where they might end up in the future or about their parenting or anything like that. It's just about where the player's playing right now. So why wouldn't you put a player in the best possible place for them to develop rather than just keeping them in a wrong team just because either the parent wants that or, for some wrong reason rather than just letting the player play at a level that's right. But I think the issue with this is the fact it's just not always done right. It's done, we'll stream that. That means I can throw out the weaker boys and getting stronger girls and getting stronger players just because I found someone that I've recruited from 30 miles away that wants to come and join our team. So I'm going to throw out little Jimmy or Jane just because I found Bob that's going to come in and join us now. And that's the problem you've got, I think, with it. But done the right way, it should be massive. And both ways, right? Getting players to move up as well as move down. It shouldn't be a one-way system. It should be a two-way system. But done for the best interest of the players, not the best interest of the coach. And I think that's where streaming sometimes breaks down.
But you have to, but everyone has to buy into that, don't they? Little
Absolutely.
Bobby's mum will say, "Well, hang on a minute. Bobby was in the A team with his mate James, and he loves James. Why is James in the A team and my boy's in the B team?" And again, it becomes about them rather than the kids. And I think that post that I put out that you saw, it's just basically, I think the kids have lost their game.
Well,
It's not about the kids anymore. It's about the coaches, it's about the parents.
it's about the
It's
adults, right? The adults taking over the
about
hobby.
that's
They've
exactly
taken over
what
the
it is.
hobby.
Every time I go out and watch football matches, all I think is, yeah, but what about the kids? I don't hear them talking anymore because they're not allowed to. And my perfect vision of a Sunday game is to go to the game and hear 14 little kids communicating, encouraging, talking, and stuff. And you know what? They'll make mistakes, but I tell you what, give them a couple of weeks and that will be absolutely music to your ears. Everyone just shuts up and clap a goal, whatever it is. But I just think, little Jimmy's getting his granddad's telling him what to do, his mum's encouraging him, and come on, baby, you can do it. His coach might be telling him something completely different, which again is another frustration, which I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
I might be telling little Harrison, I want you to play off three touch because I want us to get the ball forward a little bit quicker. And Harrison's dad telling me, you know what, boy, I've just seen the Chelsea scout in the car park. You
Bet
get
on
on
the
the
ball,
ball,
take him on. Yeah.
you get on the ball
Yeah,
and
score four goals.
you express yourself. You go and play 1v4 against their right-hand side for me. You go do it, kid.
Yeah.
But I just think, but joking aside, I just think it would be such a lovely, lovely sport for us all. Listen, it's the biggest sport for a reason, and we all love it. But I just think our passion needs to be diverted elsewhere and give the kids the game back because they
You know how
haven't
many years,
and a
Chris?
bit, yeah.
If you took, one of your Saturday JPL teams and say seven aside or nine aside, and you took and you that those players and the other team's players, and you put them in the field somewhere and left them to it on their own, just the kids, they'd probably organise the same game, but with more talking, more involvement, more decisions, probably less moaning, less complaining, just getting on with it, without any adults involved at all.
And take
Just
some
left them to it.
responsibility.
Yeah, but
Well, it
so
is. I
what?
almost
Surely
feel
we
like,
should be
yeah.
adding something, shouldn't we? As the adults, we should be adding something on top of that, not taking things away from it. If the kids could organise something pretty much themselves, and they definitely could, they definitely could. Even under sixes could get a little five-a-side game going amongst. They do it at school playground. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? So they can do it. As if we're going to get involved here, we should be adding something on top of this. To the match day experience or training, not taking things away from it to make it about us because we're worried about a result or because, like you say, granddad or mum or
And it would
dad want
be,
something.
and for me, Scott, it would be stress-free as well. Then
Yeah,
all of a
much
sudden,
more
as coaches,
enjoyable.
we'd be coming out. If you and I played a game against each other tomorrow, you and I would take two seats and we'd just sit and watch our players play. And I'd say, I tell you what, I love what Louis did there. That was great. And then all of a sudden, we haven't got this animosity between ourselves. And
No.
what it does, and again, probably the biggest point in terms of you and I, it makes us better coaches.
Absolutely.
We become more analytical, if that makes sense. And what we do on the training pitch during the week is more important. I sometimes think coaches throw training sessions away. But I tell you what, we weren't very good at that this week. So I'm going to spend an hour and a half making sure that my boys understand about the three Ps, which is position, possession, play. That's my. But instead, I will turn up on Tuesday. We'll have a kick around. And then on Saturday, when we've got a really important game, I'm going to joystick my players because I haven't taught them how to.
Yeah,
How
do
to
that.
play the right way, or pass out from the back, or get the ball wide to the players in space. All of the above. I just think it would make us better coaches because at the end of the day, I think it's PlayStation controller stuff at this moment in time. So, and if no, it's difficult at grassroots because 9 times out of 10, it's a dad who's voluntary. If that makes sense, I try and I'm not criticizing because, like I say, the volunteers do an incredible job and they're turning up and giving their own free time and stuff. And it might be a lack of confidence in their ability, if that makes sense, of say, and again, they're under pressure from the parents to win.
I think the problem there, Chris, it only takes one or two, though, doesn't it? Like in the environment to actually change that all around. And I guess I'm going to be a bit blunt here now. Like my view's always been the same. Well, I don't think being a volunteer is an excuse for poor performance. And I don't think being a volunteer is an excuse for ignorance. And I don't think being a volunteer working with kids is an excuse to anything that puts the adult above the child. And I see a lot of that. I am far from perfect. I'm a very average coach. And I've got loads to learn, but I am trying. And my constant thing is, okay, what's best for the kids on both teams at both times? I don't always get it right. Certainly on match days, I don't always get it right, but I'm not, I get it closer, I think, to right than wrong most times, but I've got a lot to learn. But I see a lot of people that you can just tell that that is not even a consideration for them. What's best for the kids is not their consideration. Winning the game might
I'm here
be.
to win for
Yeah,
me. Yeah.
how it makes me look might be, and also
Yeah.
for parents, and also for scouts. Like I don't believe that there's choices made that are thinking, okay, what's best for the kids here? The kid individually and the kids collectively. And if you're a conscientious coach, and I know that we are, and we do care about the players, you're not thinking about just one of your players or your own kid or anything. You're thinking about all the kids on your team, plus the kids on the other team, plus the kids that are maybe in the team, because you want to get it all right. And there's so many variables to that it makes it really, really tough. And it only takes one or two people that aren't doing that on the outside that changes the whole dynamic. Because if there's one coach in a league that has that win at all cost mentality, that triggers someone else in to kind of get a bit closer to that.
100%.
That triggers somebody else. And so that one bad apple, has just made us all a bit goes to the wrong side of that equation, and rather than actually going the other way.
And it
And
would work that way, but it wouldn't work the other way. So
it
if you
absolutely
and I came into a league of 20 teams and you and I were doing it properly, everyone else would go, no, we're going to stick. Yeah, we'll stick with We'll stick with the short term. We'll stick with short term fix.
Yeah, it's easier to do that way than it is throughout. Yeah. And that I think that is the biggest problem is how do we shift it around? Because what I want to do, because people may not have seen your Facebook posts, and you know, like I said, I've known you for a long time, and it's not like you to kind of put something out there publicly like that and be as quite as probably black and white about it. So if you don't mind, talk us through the post, what you said, where it came from, and some of the sponsors that you got, if you don't mind, just generally speaking.
Yeah, well, it came from the heart. You know, it's really difficult. I tend to just keep myself to myself, but I've been recruiting a lot from my under sevens and under eights over the last couple of weeks. So I've spent a lot of time and probably the bit that broke my spirit was I spent a lot of time watching under sevens and under eights football, where it should be,
it should be magical, shouldn't it? It should be magical.
Yeah, it should be just that. And it's just, and it was the opposite, you know, from not just like I said, coach, and don't get me wrong. Like I said, there's three or four of the games that I've watched where guys are doing it properly and tying shoelaces. And I watched a brilliant coach whose kid was injured. And he said, come over, mate. I've got some magic water. I didn't know. I tell you what, it was a player from an opposition. And the lad was injured. And the coach ran on. He said, do you want some of our magic water? I put it on the players. And the kid went, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he poured the water on his foot. And the lad ran away. And it was just such a, and that's what you want to see, five or six or seven magic moments like that. And that maybe doesn't answer the question, but that's what grassroots football should be.
That should be normal, shouldn't it? That should be normal
You should be seeing little things like that five or six or seven times.
But so what did you post in? So was your post kind of just saying that I've seen a few things, start the season and it ain't great, and you know, and there were some suggestions about what else we might want to do?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. There's a few referees. I've had some issues getting some referees. I'm sure you're the same. It's very difficult to get a referee to referee your home games. I've had three referees say to me that they will not referee in the JPL because of the experiences they've had. Two young referees who I know personally, who I coached when they were younger, don't want to referee anymore because they've been shouted at and abused, whatever you want to do it, to the point where they don't want to do it anymore. Ref, 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 ref. Yeah. We've all heard it.
Yeah.
I just felt I needed to, with a little bit of, who knows, with the fact that I run my own business and maybe have a little bit of a sway in it, if that makes sense. I just felt it was time to kind of voice my concerns about football, because I think I think if this continues, I think we may have a problem. You know, yes. Again, at the weekend, I heard two or three stories about coaches and linesmen being pulled apart. Yeah, not good.
It's getting worse, isn't it? I think there's
just no need for it. But I truly believe we're at the stage now when maybe me putting that out there was my way of, you know, I was thinking about a petition. That's kind of what I was at that stage now where I was actually sitting there thinking, I'm going to put this post out and see what kind of reaction I get, in terms of thinking, you know what, can I get 1,000 coaches to sign a petition to the point where the FA puts something in place where we have, because listen, if you're going to do silent weekend, they must think that there's an issue and there's a problem and they want to do something about it. So if that's an idea for week one, well, why don't we have that for the whole season? And that's my way of looking at it, because, you know, I put the post out and there's a few people who said, oh, you can't leave under sevens and under eights on their own to manage their own thing. And you and I both know, well, have we tried it?
Absolutely can. We've done it.
100%. Yep. Like I say, we both coach kids at a very, very young age. And if you give them a little bit of scope and you make sure that they know the rules, and it's just about being pre-prepared and planned, isn't it? You know, if you make sure that they've got all the equipment and you give them 30, right, all the cones are over there. Bobby, you're in charge of making sure they've got the bibs. Jimmy, you do the warm-up and make sure that we've got one ball between two and all that kind of stuff. If you give them a little bit of responsibility, it's amazing. And you can't tell me a parent who's not going to look at you and I after that and go, I tell you what, my boy's not just learning football skills, he's learning life skills, he's more confident. And you and I, kids getting shouted at and screamed at, I think their confidence goes that way rather than that way. So I'm trying to use football as a tool to actually, you know, mental health problems are so... since COVID, etc., the amount of young kids that I speak to their parents and they're struggling with life and mental health problems. And you and I both know that football is an amazingly powerful tool in helping kids cope with problems at school, problems at home, whatever it is. And I think if you just give them a little bit of scope, I tell you what, Bobby, you're going to be captain today and I want you to do the warm-up. You can't tell me that that's not going to be the most exciting thing for that boy to do that day and stuff. And wouldn't it be lovely to watch? Wouldn't it be more entertaining to watch? And if all of a sudden we're not caring about the result, then all of a sudden if little Jimmy's warm-up's funny and all the kids are laughing, and I don't see enough laughter and smiles on the football pitch anymore. I just see I just see kids, right, we're playing 2-1-2 now, and we've got to get the ball back, and we've got to win the ball back in 3 seconds. And I'm as guilty as anyone. You know, can we get the ball back in 3 seconds?
But the anxiety brews up, doesn't it? And suddenly it just spreads, and before you know it, it becomes default position.
But can that come from little Bobby? Can Bobby say, right, and your mission this week, can every time there's a centre or every time there's a throw-in, can you say 3 seconds? Can we get the ball back in 3 seconds? Coming from the kid. And you a learning tool. And
Yeah.
that's not me barking every 3 seconds. That comes from Bobby. And every time Bobby goes on the pitch, right, Jimmy, it's your turn to shout the 3 seconds. You can't tell me that that's not just developing footballers. We're developing people as well. You know,
Yeah.
which I think is far more important.
What I found a little bit frustrating, I think, is seeing some of the sponsors that you got back. Some nice ones and encouragements and people being open-minded. Not no one's got to agree with you. That's absolutely fine not to agree. But some people were a bit dismissive. And like, there's things you suggest on there that I know that we have done and they have worked 100% well. You can get a bunch of under sevens to run a game. Of course, you're going to be there. Of course, you're going to set a few things up. Of course, you're going to be there to nudge a few things along. But generally speaking, your involvement can be like 5% of what it might be on a normal day. And it works really, really well. And when the things don't work, that's the best learning things. The little things that kind of don't kind of run as smoothly, that's when the most learning takes place. You're not going to let it have a complete car crash. You're not going to let things get unsafe or out of hand, but it just doesn't. And I kind of felt like some of the responses were very dismissive. And maybe people tried it and it hasn't worked for them, but you know, it definitely can work. And I guess most importantly is recognizing, okay, if that's not what we want to be doing, what can we do to make things better? Because I don't see many people that disagree with you on the fact that the football's not in a great space and it doesn't like it's improving. So what else could we do? And I think you had some ideas about things on there that you know suggested. What were some of the things you listed down about some of the things we could do maybe to turn things around?
Yeah, so in terms of that, it would be a simple case of a mutual agreement that the coaches, the parents, that we all turn up, and the only time we get conversation is the coach talks to the lads at pre-match, and then they go and do their own warm-up, which again is guided by the coach, but again minimally, if that makes sense. And then 50, the 4 50-minute games, whatever it is, in between the games, there is a conversation that can be led by, because I know you would do it because you're a great coach. You would lead, you know what, Marcus, you're going to, because I think you take it to the point, well, right, but listen, there's a little less pressure on us as coaches to deliver now.
Yeah.
Right, I'm now going to give, you know what, Marcus, you take the first team talk, and Louis, you take the next one.
Chris, our captains always do the team talk, and
Yeah.
that's some maybe under nines up. Our captains take the team talk. You know, we'll ask the questions. Okay, captain, what's about the game? What have you seen? So we're kind of instigating the conversations a little bit at times, but it's their conversation. We're just facilitating it from the outside. We may drop in a few things towards the end of that conversation because we've seen a couple of things that might to consider. But it's put as questions. It's not about right. You know, the Scott show here. It's like, what have you guys seen? You're playing it. You know, captains
But
leads
what I've
feedback a
noticed,
little
and I
bit.
can say that because the way that your lads have not just developed technically, but their personality as well, there's a reason why you run very successful football teams, is because your boys have developed and learned. And not just, I mean, on the pitch, I also mean off the pitch as well. It's really important. I just don't think enough people have enough patience. I think they want, right, we need to be, it's October, we need to be good in November. We've got a big
Yeah.
game coming up against Tring
Yeah.
Tornadoes in November. Under sevens, if we win, we go three matches unbeaten. And
Yeah.
I joke about that kind of stuff, but I just think I think we're at the stage now where I just, instead of being silent weekend, I'd like to see it run its course. Because I think some parents go, right, I can be quiet this Sunday, okay, but next Sunday. And the amount of
Yeah.
people that have
Yeah.
said to me, oh, but kids want to be supported and cheered on, and do they?
Yeah, but does that happen? I mean, I the lo the loudest noises I hear from the touchline are complaints shouting at the refs.
Exactly.
Like, so I get that,
Ref.
cheering 100%, but I don't hear that. We get a bit of clapping when we score a goal. You know, usually just from our team or the other team's parents clap their own team. I don't often see other parents clapping other people's teams. It happens occasionally. Actually, the game played on Saturday, the coach clapped one of our goals, which was lovely. I thought I didn't see it live, but I saw it on the video back. You know, so it doesn't not happen, but it doesn't happen enough. But if you record a game and listen to it back, then the biggest noise comes from people moaning and complaining, whether it's the coaches or the parents. So you know, if you can't control that side of your emotions, then like you say, you got overcorrect by going complete silent then, which is a shame. We want to hear the encouragement, the positive stuff, but if you can't be trusted just to do that side and not the other stuff, or that be the dominant side, the positive thing, then you almost have to overcorrect by saying, actually, let's keep it silent then, which I think seems a shame as well. But what else do you do? Like, you know, what else, where'd you go with it?
But unless that's done from the FA, then you and I are just flogging a dead horse, aren't
And
we?
the FA won't take responsibility, will they? I
And
mean,
they
that's
won't,
a
like I said, because I don't think they would see this as a massive issue. I know they're trying to, I think they're trying. I think their biggest project now, which I think you and I would probably agree with, is trying to get under sevens and eights playing 2v2s with 4 goals instead,
Yeah, exactly,
which
exactly
would
that.
absolutely change the game. And also, actually, I do believe also take this issue out. Because then all of a sudden you can maybe have your strongest players playing against each other, instead of having four mini pitches and let the less experienced ones play against each other and stuff.
Yeah.
But again, that's probably another subject for another day. But
Yeah.
I just think in terms of the behaviours that are happening on the sidelines is it's just not happy. It's just not helping. It's
No.
not helping, and it's and it is and. Ruining is a strong word, but we're at the stage now where I think something needs to happen, and some adjustments need to be made, because it's only getting worse, and to the point where all I just see is coaches arguing with each other and parents arguing with each other and pushing and shoving going on in car parks and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not exaggerating because I've seen it.
Oh, and worse,
And
and at
worse.
young ages, and these aren't talking about under 16s. That would be under 16s, but you're talking under sevens, eights. This is happening. It's
I'm
ridiculous.
talking under, like I say, under nines and 10. And also, more important, the referees. Like I said, it's one of the other reasons why, again, I'm very fond of a couple of lads who are trying their best to earn a little bit of money, showing some being proactive and saying, and let's be honest, the young referees get very well paid,
Yeah.
which is fair enough, but that doesn't mean they get very well paid to get shouted at and abused at. And, they're trying to make their way in the game. They've gone and done their referees courses, so they're trying to get some experience. And their experiences are lasting 2 or 3 weeks because our little friend from one of the football clubs who has got his level one, he's got his level two, but he's got absolutely no patience. And it's not about development, only about developing his win record on his fridge magnets at home.
Yeah.
Just shouting, ref, ref. And
Let's talk about this. So what do you think the cause is, Chris? I know it's probably an unfair question, but what's the root cause of this? Because I'm on the same page as you, but if we have to unpick it, what's causing the problem? Why is it happening and why is it getting worse?
Is it a
Is
lack
it
of
us as
is it
coaches?
a
Oh, the
is it a
way
lack of ability in the coaching?
Yeah,
Is that
possibly.
fair to
Certainly my
say?
case.
Like I said, I think if you can't coach, you don't coach. If
Yeah.
that makes sense, it really is a simple case. The people who I see joy sticking the most are people I look at and go, yeah, where's the problem? Have you solved the problem, or have you given them a problem? If
What are
that
you
makes
doing in
sense.
the training?
Listen,
But do you
it's really harsh because listen, I'm really lucky. Again, I run a business. I'm a football coach for a living, so I have time to dedicate to watching YouTube videos and get to go on great courses and stuff like that. And again, hats off to the volunteers. A bit like what you said, I agree with what you said. It's not an excuse for not being good enough. But do they have the time and the money and the experiences to go away and do a 6 week course on playmaking in midfield, whatever it is, that these kind of courses that the FA put on and stuff like that to kind of develop your game. But at the same time, I just think it's, there's lots of coaches out there who are obviously trying to manage under sevens, under eights, under nines, foundation football, if that makes sense, and they're coaching it as if they're running an adults team on a Sunday,
Yeah.
or a pub team on a Sunday. It's just but you and I both, if you and I ran a business and we sat down and had a meeting and said, right, we're going to bring in two young lads to coach, I wouldn't go and get two football coaches. I'd go and get two child entertainers.
Absolutely.
I'd go and get two lads who do birthday parties really well. I'd go and get two lads who have got a great way of communicating, a little bit of empathy. I had a very difficult time when I was younger. I was ill for 10 years, which I think I mentioned in my previous podcast, and what that's given me is given me a real zest for life, because I've had a second chance. So a little bit of empathy, a huge amount of patience, and patience is a strong word. I'm just not sure people have got the patience to go, you know what, I want these kids to be good when they're 14. I like to think you're on the same kind of page as me, as if say I'm my 8, 9, and 10 year olds at this moment in time, I want to make sure they're good. They're not just good, they're loving the game at 14, and more importantly, they're playing the game at a decent level at 14. I'm just not sure.
Chris, that's a great point. I wonder if that's half the problem here, because, like you say, look, 10 years doing this, and you kind of lose patience a little bit with what the environment, don't you? And I kind of, I've shut myself off a little bit. I just get on with it. I can't control what goes out there. I control my own space and see what happens. I've tried to help, try to make things better where I can, but you know, some people don't want to listen. But I've had the benefit of 10 years. I've had the benefit of having an older kid and a younger kid, so, and making mistakes. I wonder if a lot of this is, you know, as the coaches come through on their journeys, probably by the time they've got to under 15, 16, they might well look back and reflect and think, actually, oh, you know, I could have done that differently. It could have been better back then. But they just, it was, you know, their best at the time. And I wonder if what they really need is mentorship. They need to be linked. If I was coached under eights now, link me up with a person that's under 16, has done it since under eight. So they can tell me, Scott, relax. This five-a-side game doesn't mean that much. They trust me. You know, think about doing this. Think about doing that. You know, just give me some ideas. So actually, rather than me getting obsessed in that moment, like all the other coaches that I'm probably with are similar, mums and dads that have stepped up, that are trying to do their best. Like you say, that it's a hobby for them. Well, it should be their kid, but you know, they make it a hobby as well. And they're trying to do the right things. Maybe they just don't know really what the end result looks like. Therefore, they're not making good choices right now. Maybe some kind of mentorship with older coaches would be a great way of kind of, you know, getting yourself
around. I just think it's a really short-term project, but you're absolutely right. Can Jimmy's dad, who's running, bless him, he's running the under sevens. He's been thrown in because no one else wants to do it. And again, hats off to these guys for stepping in, because without them, there's 20 lads who are not getting to play football, and hats off to them for doing that. But what's he thinking? Is he being given a 5-year plan by Daniel Levy to run it? Is he getting backed by the? No, he's not. He probably thinks, I'm going to do this for a year, and I need to get results. And again, that comes from a little bit of pressure. You know, there are some parents out there who are chasing academy contracts for their child, and if it's played for, drawn to, lost to, and she goes to the school playground on a, this is very judgmental of me, but I'm going with it. She goes on the school playground on Monday morning, and little Bobby's team's played 4-1-4, sitting top of a league that doesn't even exist because we don't publish scores. But his team's doing better than their team. You know, mate, you know.
Yeah.
It all of a sudden, it matters. And then all of a sudden, she gives it a couple of weeks and goes, no, I won't. Oh, has Bobby got a place on his team? Can my boy come and play? And you know as well as I do, he's probably going to a coach who's even more short term. He's getting results because he's playing his boys in the same positions. He's got an under seven up front who is as quick as lightning, and he's got a great shot with his right foot. He scored 77 goals in 7 games, and they're winning every game, but the rest of the players are not quite there. But the coach that I'm speaking about, who's played, who's won two and drawn two, is playing everyone in different positions. He's exceptional with the kids. He's given them some ownership. And in a year or two's time, all the boys that are playing for his team will be ready to play at a much higher level. But that's 2 years down the line, and I don't think people have got that time or patience to kind of wait for that. Wait for the trust the process. I'm sure you've heard that phrase many times, but you say it and you just sound like you're just being a soppy football coach. Trust the process. It's not about results, it's about development. And I say that to myself all the time. And if we've had a difficult result in the JPL where I think we played fabulously well, it's not about the result, it's about the performance, or it's about development and stuff. And I almost feel myself being sick in my mouth when I say it, because the parents have heard it time and time. And it sounds like an excuse. It does sound like an excuse from the outside looking in. Because
well, the problem you got, Chris, I think, with that one, it's not an excuse. And I know a very similar approach with regards to that. We've seen it again. Stick with your kids. Give the right message over the longer term, 3, 6, 12 months plus, not 3, 6, 12 weeks, but 3, 6, 12 months plus, and see whatever. And it definitely works. The problem you've got, though, is apples and oranges, isn't it? So you might take your team and do that, and you know they improve, you know, pound for pound as a team. But the team you play against, they've not got the same players in four years' time. They've got a whole new set of players. So they just basically keep shipping new ones. So, you know, you're always struggling to get past that hurdle, but you're doing it with your players and developing and coaching. You might add in a few, because you're adding one or two as the format increases. You bring one or two up from maybe the team below, and you're adding others out externally. But you're still playing against the other team that kind of always is there or thereabouts, maybe not got the edge on you, but it's close. But they're doing it in a different way. And I don't, from the outside, people don't know that. They just see two teams and, you can't quite catch them, or you're just, you know, you're not getting ahead of them. So is your method really working? You're like, well, hold on a minute. You know, we've got the same core player. We've got the same 10, 12 players we've had since under sixes, you know, all playing together still. And we're getting the best out of them. The team we're playing against, they might have one or two kids that have had since under sixes, and all the rest base they've had for a season or two. And they're all ex-academy boys that they're just bringing in because they're available now, so they get signed somewhere else. So you can't compare, can you? I believe in it. It's a, it's more of a faith decision. You've got to see it to believe it. But if you're not in it, I can see why people.
And that's why academies, I guess, are quite lucky. Because if you and I work for QPR, for example, the parents would just go, "Well, you know what? Scott and Chris have decided it's this, and this is what we're going with." Because we can't, if we do have a little moan up, we'll be sent back in. But with grassroots, if you and
Don't have
I,
the luxury.
I don't think we're trusted. Chris and Scott only do grassroots football. They're
Yeah.
not. Academy. They're not. They're probably not doing it right, and my boy might be better off elsewhere. But yeah, it's just, like I
Yeah.
say. We're all very. I think lockdown has kind of changed a lot of mindsets in terms of, I think we want everything yesterday, whether it's in life on the football pitch, in terms of our children. I know our kid, adults. We had a tough time in lockdown, but we've got to also remember what the kids have gone through, and I think it's kind of a lot of parents are just really focused on, right, let's make sure my kid has whatever he wants. And 95% of boys, certainly that I work with, if I ask them what they want to be when they're older, they want to be a footballer. So as a parent, you go, well, right, how am I going to get my boy the best possible chance of being a footballer? And I just think the answer to that in their heads is completely the wrong answer, if that makes sense. It is about being obsessed and working hard. It's not about swapping teams every 2 minutes.
No,
It's
that didn't develop you, does it?
not
No.
about winning football matches the weekend. It's about your lad spending an hour instead of going in an hour and spending on playing on Fortnite, which has got a 15 rating of our chat, right? And still the 7 or 8 year-olds playing it. That's another podcast for another day. But why is he not out like Glenn Hoddle used to do, bouncing the ball off a wall for 1,000 times a day and stuff like that? That's what makes your kid a footballer. It's not about who he plays for and what he's doing at the weekend and stuff like that. But I just, yeah, it's just being a little bit more open-minded, cool our jets, being a little bit cooler, calm and collected on the side. But how we do that as a collective without the FA going, right, we're going to put things in place. But I mean, I would just be called a party pooper when it comes to this kind of stuff. I mean, where's the app? I mean, one of the comments w in response to what I said was, yeah, but where's the atmosphere going to be? Yeah. What
Well,
we're playing at the Yellow Wall in Borussia Dortmund. What we're doing, it's, yeah, that was one of the comments was, yeah, but the boys would want to play in an atmosphere, would they?
yeah, well, yeah, again, this is, I think, people answer the questions as an adult from their own perspective, don't they? It's like, hold on a
Yeah.
minute, I'll ask the players what they would like. And like, the atmosphere of everyone shouting at each other and berating the ref isn't one I don't think the players would ever choose to have. And if they did choose to have it, is it the one you want to create for the players around it? Like, what it doesn't, I don't buy it. I think the biggest issue that I've seen, particularly over the last few years, is the game has become the adult's hobby. So
Yes.
whether it's the coach, it means more to the coach now than it does to the players, which I think is always dangerous. Especially, like, don't get me wrong, when it's your business, I understand it. I'm not saying because you're on the podcast, Chris, but I do understand it. You know, it's from a business point of view, it's got to mean something to you because it's your business. That said, you still have to put the, from my opinion, you still got to put the kids first and make it about them because you're working with the, it's the business of children you're in, right? You know, you're not selling Mars bars,
Well,
you're working with children.
I have to feel passionate about it, and I would be really stupid if I put that post out last week and didn't practice what I preach. It's super difficult at times. I do have to bite my tongue at times because there are times where I truly believe we've lost football matches because the opposition coach has influenced the referee more than I have. And I stand on the side sometimes and I get home and I ring my mum and we have a conversation. I said, "Mum, we lost that football match because I was trying to do the right thing and I was trying to be respectful. I was trying to be nice and I was trying to be quiet and I was trying to let my boys solve their own problems." And
Yeah.
we lost 3-2, and then the final whistle goes, and there's lots of fist pumps and running around and high fives, and my boys look upset, and the opposition look really happy, and their coach is fist pumping, and all the parents are hollering and whooping, "Unlucky FFC, unlucky!" And I'm,
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
it's really difficult to stand there and stick your chest out and not think, well, do you know what? If I'd been a little bit more spiky and a little bit more in terms, I might have been able to intimidate the referee and stuff like that. And that's the bit that I find really difficult. Because what example are we setting to kids? Because I sometimes think of the spiky coaches I know, they've got a group of spiky players as well.
Well, the teams often mirror the manager, don't they, or the coach?
Yeah, and
Is that the problem, Chris?
that's really difficult.
Is it like the grey area? I mean, like, because it's subjective, right? Where's the behavioural line? I mean, there are some red flags, I guess. You know, generally speaking, it's all frowned upon. You should, when you start rolling around and throwing punches, you've probably gone too far. I think everyone probably can agree that, although it does happen. But almost up until that point, I think it's very grey. Like, in my head, it's not. Like, I know what I will and won't do from the touchline and what I think acceptable, but that's my opinion. I don't think the FA are clear enough about it. Like, personally, I don't think as managers we should speak to the ref. I don't wish to say anything to the referee because
Yeah.
the ref refs the game. Because the minute I question the ref decision, you know, one or two things happened. Either the opposition person then gets louder as well to question. So you get a dual thing happening. Or the players, my players think that I'm complaining about something, therefore, and depending on their children, subconsciously or consciously, they're thinking that, oh, we're being cheated here by the ref because our managers obviously, yeah. You know, so now they're going to start complaining about the decision because they think the ref's against them. Then the other players start doing it. It becomes a bit of a completely a vicious circle. And it's just, but I think that's considered as normal practice. I think some coaches genuinely think giving the ref a hard time is part of the game. You know, it's just part of what you do because they see it having adult football. They see it in the Premier League. They see, you know, the manager up to us like chatting the referees. And they think actually, whether it's under 16s or under 60s, that's part of the game. And they
I've heard
do
it's
it.
Allowed. That's what I've heard from some coaches. Coach said, I'm allowed to talk to the referee. And look what they've done in the Premier League now. And that's something we need to act on. The Premier League now, only the captain is allowed to talk to the referee.
But yet the manager's still on the touchline going mental. I mean, I'm an Arsenal fan, but you see, I'll tell you, all the coaches, they're shouting at them and the sky carry pants. And if they're not shouting at the ref, they're shouting at the fourth officials thing. Like, but look, I think that's completely wrong. I think that should be a complete no-go straight away. But ultimately, surely as adults, we should recognise we're not in the Premier League. You know, this isn't like, that's not an excuse to do what we do on the touchline here. If I was the FA, I would just say you cannot talk to the referee anything at all, unless it's like a safeguarding or a wellbeing issue kind of thing, but you can't say anything about decisions like that. And if you do, the referee is perfectly entitled to call the game. And that is because the minute the coaches shut up and don't shout at the referee, it all calms down. The players focus on the game. The parents are, you know, will suddenly, you look a bit silly then being the one parent shouting out when everyone else is a bit calm around you. But it's almost got to start from the people that are leading the practices and the match day, and rightly or wrong, that's often the coaches or the managers there. I just think just do that and ask the refs, say to the refs, look, the minute you get one or two that you've heard and shouting at you, give them a warning. If they keep on, pull the game. It will stop. And 2 weeks
of
that...
You've got to be brave to walk up, Palmer, haven't you? But listen, I've said it before. I would back him. If I had a young lad refereeing with me, and again, I'm not going to... If he looked at me and said, I've had two... Mate, I'll walk off with you. Not a problem. Yeah, you need a little bit back. See, young lads are 16, 17 years old. And I've heard stories of referees walking off the pitch before. And they've taken so much abuse. And I think there's even been some abuse, physical abuse on them in the car park because they've walked off the pitch and ruined the game. But without that person trying to make that stand. And that's what we need to do. One person needs to grow the cojones, as if to say, to walk off that pitch to the point where that manager or that coach has to explain to his kids and that parent, oh, the reason why this game isn't taking place anymore is because of me being stupid or me being abusive and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, guess what? That goes out in an email to the FA, and I don't think that happens again. Or it happens two or three times less than it's done before. And
it wouldn't take long to turn it around. I think the problem there, Chris, is that the person wouldn't recognise what you'd get from the coach that was the problem, in inverted commas. But I did nothing wrong. It wasn't a free, you know, it shouldn't have been a free kick. I was saying, if it wasn't a free kick, I did nothing wrong. They're overreacting. So I think you have to almost go, well, it's not about right or wrong. It's about you don't talk to the ref when the game's on. Yeah, you don't do it. Simple as that. So I'm not saying you were right or wrong. Maybe the ref got it horrifically wrong, but they're allowed to. They're refereeing the game. They make mistakes. Deal with it. That's what it is. You can't, you know, you need to just shut up. And I think once we get that would be a massive step in the right direction. Because once that all calms down and the players calm down, you know, suddenly people have to look at themselves. But you know what it's like. The game starts off all right. Then that first tackle goes. Then one coach shouts out. Someone doesn't like it. You know, then another coach shouts. Then the parents start shouting out. Then the players are going off. And then two players of a row, which the parents are getting more, because obviously it's a kid out there, so your emotional attachment to it. Heaven forbid if it was a coach's kid that ends up getting a bad tackle, it's even worse. You've got the coach and also the parent getting involved. And I think actually, if we just let the refs ref the game, good, bad, or indifferent, there's some great refs and bad, it doesn't matter, does it? If you lose a game because the refs made mistakes, you'll win one because they made mistakes in another day. So you just have
and
to
the
deal
coach
with that.
Can then do what? You know what? Focus on his players.
Yeah, and just
instead of focusing on, absolutely
it's
right.
It's not them out shouting us and getting the refs here, it's just the refs had a bad day.
These young lads would learn more in a less pressured environment. None of these lads, listen, some of these 16, 17-year-old lads who are reffing our games, I don't think if you ask them what they want to be when they're older, they don't want to manage in the Premier League. They just want to earn a bit of money doing something that they quite enjoy in an environment that they've kind of grown up in, if that makes sense. But yeah, if we can just have a... If that's the first thing that comes out, listen, trying to get the parents and the coaches to not talk is probably... Mount Kilimanjaro, isn't it, in terms of doing it? It's just
but
not...
So you go for the big one, don't you? You go for the big one to see where you land. Because
aim,
if you can
aim
get
high
that one...
But like you said, if you can have the point where the referees, no one is allowed to talk to the referees, but there'll be, like I said, There'll be people like that. Well, but I want to speak to the referee about something that happened in the first half. No.
You
You've made
can't. You
15.
can't.
You've made 15 mistakes today already, pal, because I've been watching on the sideline.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that
But just
referee's
if you
made
just
one
say you
mistake. But
can't.
I'm not gonna make. But I could list them now. Do you want to see how many times you made a mistake in that first?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's difficult.
Just quickly, Chris, we mentioned once twice the academy system then. What part does it play? I'm not looking to point fingers or blame anybody because, it's not about right or wrong. But does it make things worse because all the pressure, or not pressure, because maybe these pathways into the academy system, and also, it starts younger now, doesn't it? Often they're saying now, most of the players are signed by under nines that go on to make it. So you've got to get in early. Is this part of the thing that's fueling the craziness and the
Even under
adult?
seven, under sevens are getting offered kit now by football clubs, because they can't sign them till they're nine. I bumped into a parent this week, and she told me that her young man is getting offered kit and stuff. So they're trying to already butter them up,
Yeah.
ready for the decision, which is going to happen in what, 18 months' time. They're already trying to get their claws in and stuff. But
But to
listen,
be clear, then,
the
so the problem with
academy.
that, I just because I
So
want to
yeah.
relate it back to this situation. So, because I think people say, what's wrong with that? So that one kid's getting a good deal, blah, blah. But my problem with that is great for the kid, by the way, fantastic, and hopefully they'll set the world on fire and it'll be a great journey for them and they'll do wonders with it. But where I think it impacts negatively on the bigger picture is once one parent hears about that, they want their kid that. So that's what fuels this whole kind of intensity to be in the best winning team and be with where the most scouts are going to go. And
But is
I
that
think the
not? But that's just impossible to control, isn't it? But is that not life? It is difficult. Like I said, little bear Bobby. I always mention Bob.
yeah
Bobby's my less experienced player. Let's go with Jimmy. Jimmy Scott.
Bobby just
Jimmy.
got
Like I said, Jimmy's training with Fulham, QPR, Tottenham, and Arsenal. And he's flying. And then obviously, mum and dad see. So mum and dad from one of his best mates. Who also he scored 4 goals at the weekend and matched him in terms of performance. But you and I both know playing at a level 4 times below what he maybe could be doing if he's playing at a pro club. And they're thinking, well, hang on a minute. If he's got a contract and he's getting offered kit by Fulham, why isn't my boy, if that makes sense? It's the FOMO thing, isn't it? And that's the how you manage it. It's so difficult. But that's what
Well, but again, I
yeah.
would like the clubs to take responsibility. I don't know the answer to this. And it's more of a scouting question, which we got a guest on next week who's very experienced in this. But my question to him is going to be like, could we do it different? Is there, because this does cause problems. I get it works for the academy system. I get that, and it's fine. But most kids don't end up in that space. But yet, it's impacting on the kids that are playing grassroots football. Indirectly, it is because you suddenly got these parents now of kids that aren't quite at that level, but think their kid is at that level or wants to be at that level, that making all bad choices, jumping the kid from place to place, chasing down the wrong things. I just think it has a knock-on impact and it's part of
Do
the
you think
problem
they
here.
scout? Do you think they scout too many players? Do you think that fishing net that goes out at under sevens and
I
eight
think the way they
is too
scout
big?
is wrong. And I'll be honest with you, from my experience, I think there's some really good scouts out there. The ones that have been around for years, that know the club, that know what the coaches are looking for, that can ask the right questions, that come to games, that observe, that do it the right way. But unfortunately, from my experience, there's also lots of scouts there that but well-intended, but very inexperienced, don't really know what questions to ask. Come and watch 15 minutes of a game. Come at the end and ask us which player we think is the best player, or that, or go for the biggest kids there. They cause a problem because as soon as the scout's there, the parents get all carried away with that stuff. They think it's something else. The talent ID days, the showcase games, these things, they often don't lead anywhere. It just takes them out of your club for 6 or 8 weeks while they go and then come back in a bit deflated, a
Yeah.
bit demoralized, and look, I don't know. I'm not in the world, so I'm not the best person to move this forward. But what I can tell you from someone that's kind of in and around it from an outside perspective, I don't think it works. I'm not saying the numbers for the academy system, that's a different conversation completely, but just the process to get them in. I think the amount of kids that kind of end up in that space and enjoy it, for the amount it impacts on negatively that I've seen firsthand, not even the ones that have gone in, but the ones that have kind of been now sucked in that kind of
Yeah.
merry-go-round of nonsense, that end up not focused on development, but to focus on short-term trying to get that signature somewhere. I just don't think it works. And I think if academies were more honest about the numbers and how to do it, or there was a better way of doing it, I think we should be open to that conversation because your scouts are managed or managers don't like scouts because they're going to get your players. It's an open door for us, but I want the right scout to come down and do the right thing with the players and talk to all the players about what they're looking for, what does the club want, and how do I get into an Arsenal or a QPR or something else? What's important for them, what values they appreciate both on the pitch and off the pitch. And you might not get scouted in inverted commas that day, but you're going to at least learn something by the scout being there. The whole team will learn something rather than just one player's name. game getting down because they might have just scored a banger that 1 week. They haven't scored all season. They haven't scored one great goal, which happened to us. One player that's, you know, it just seems to me like, again, it's the adults making it about themselves, but aren't really thinking about, okay, is it right for the kids or is there a better way of doing it?
But I think the clubs have to take a little bit of responsibility. I mean, I would use the phrase manage expectations. I've been involved in football a long time. I think some coaches, scouts, I think they tell you what you want to hear. You know, I've fallen out with 4 or 5 parents in the last 18 months who have left FFC because I told them the truth. I had a funny feeling that they weren't quite physical enough for academy football based on the conversation we had at the start. You know, football's changed. It's not about, you know, when we think about who are the best couple of great players that the world's ever seen, Maradona, Iniesta, Messi, 5 foot nothings. But in terms of the academies right now, when you look at, you know, when I watched Chelsea under 12s play in a tournament last couple of weekends, one of the granddads sent me a link because I'd coached one of the boys younger, and just looking at the physicality of these under 12s, they're all big, strong, athletic boys who can run quick. Yeah. If that makes sense. So I think there's an element of managing expectations and telling parents what they want to hear. I think most scouts would probably just go, you know what, I think your boy's got a chance, rather than saying, well, at this moment in time, he probably lacks a little bit of physicality. But like you said, that's having the right scout down there. I think the right scout would go at this moment in time. You know, some scouts are just lads who are, this is going to sound awful, but some lads are just given tracksuits, aren't they? Because they're willing to go out there and put a location on their timesheet. Again, this is just what I've heard.
Well, they have to, don't they? They have to go. Parents don't understand this. They don't recognise when a scout comes, they have to put a player's name down to justify where they've been. So, you know, you might have been awful, but if you're the least awful player on that day, you're going to be scouted by a thing. But it creates all that hullabaloo and that fuss again.
Because I've been there for 2 hours. I want to put one name down.
But kick down, and even come and ask us who to put down.
Yeah, completely brainwashed. Those parents into thinking, oh, my boy's ready for Crystal Palace because he got scouted by Crystal Palace today. And I've had it on many occasions where I've spoken to parents. He said, yeah, he got scouted by Chelsea today. Yeah. And you kind of think,
okay. And again, I'm not like anti anything, but you think, is this pro the boys? Does it help them on their development? Does it help them make good decisions? And I'm not sure that it does for the players. I think it's another noise that on the outside can sometimes get in the way.
But... No, I think there needs to be some sort of code of conduct on that one, in a simple sense. And if you do go and scout someone, then it needs to go back to the big cheeses, if that makes sense. And they kind of go, right, we'll send him down and watch it. Again, that requires patience, and that boy might be scouted by someone else. But I think there needs to be a process in place, because that lad here, and that he's been scouted by Crystal Palace, and I've heard some, and you probably the same, I've heard some boys have been scouted by professional football clubs and they don't even follow it up.
We're
waiting for Watford to call us, and then I speak to them 6 months later and Watford didn't call, and you're like, are you kidding me? That poor lad is ready to rock, and he's probably every day wakes up and goes, Mum, have Watford called yet and stuff? No, they haven't, darling, they haven't. And you're like, yeah.
All right, Chris. Well, look, if you could change one thing about the world of coaching, like, which is hard in this conversation, one thing, what would you change?
Again, to echo what I said, just give the kids the game back.
Make it back, yeah.
Let's do football with a smile and enjoy it. And I'm talking about coaches. I think we enjoy it and we love it. And win, lose or draw, you know, listen, everyone wants to win. And there's times where I come home and we've played against a local rival or whatever it is. And you kind of want to get the better of it and stuff like that. I just want the kids to get their game back. And if that means, and I think for the benefit of them, you're absolutely right. I think football is now adult and coach focused, which is a nonsense. We've had our go. We've had our turn. We played 11v11 as 9-year-olds when we were younger. So maybe we didn't get the opportunities that these young lads get. And there's maybe a little bit of FOMO working that way. You and I didn't get development centres, and we didn't get to, I'm pretty sure, Aberdeen Development Centre, if they ran it, I might have got a 6-week trial. Who knows? I would have probably got bombed off because I didn't work hard enough, but I didn't use the left foot. But yeah, my point is a bit like what we said, and it sounds really harsh, but I, hand on my heart, I say it with absolute 100% conviction, is that this game is for the adults rather than the children now. And that is as damning as a comment as I can make. But I'd argue to the cows come home with anyone who says it's not, because it is. Like I said, every negative comment back to me on that little post I put on Facebook, It just rang of, what about me? What about me? And I didn't keep going back to these people because, you know, sometimes you just can't have that
You're not
conversation.
going to
But
win, are you?
yeah, it was all
No.
about, but I really enjoy coaching. And what about the parents not getting it? Yeah, but what about the children? What about the children? And giving them a little bit more scope, a little bit more ability to express themselves. It's going to make them better people. It's going to make them more confident. And it's surely, as a parent, you know, you send your kid to school to not just learn how to add 4 and 4, but also how to, you know, to solve problems and learn about respect and all that kind of stuff. And surely, learning respect and camaraderie and teamwork in an environment where they love it, because most kids go to school and they don't particularly love it, but doing it in something that they love, is that not a great opportunity for us to jump on it and go, you know what? Let's turn football into an education rather than a sport as well, where there's a real scope to make it even better than what it is right now. And I truly believe every single one of us would enjoy it so much more if we just spent a little less time using our mouths and our opinions, rather than just going, okay, Bobby's playing football today. I'm going to go and sit and I'm going to go and watch. I'm going to go and enjoy watching my kid play football. Because that's the phrase, I'm going to go and watch my kid play football. I'm going to go and shout at my kid playing football. What's Sean Dyche always say? If your kid's in a classroom or he's doing a maths test, you shout at him and he
Shout
gets
it
the
with.
answers wrong and stuff like that. And that's what we're watching. I mean, it's brutal, it's toxic, it's barbaric. And that sounds incredibly harsh, but that's how strongly I feel about it. And it's not going to change. And it really does need to change. And that's probably the first time in my 20 years in coaching where I genuinely think that it has to change. It's pittered along and it's been going that way, but we're at the stage now where someone has to step in and change it. Not just for the kids, for everybody. Like I said, for coaches who are waking up on a Saturday morning and feeling the stresses and the strains, you and I both know when you've got a big game, you're probably same as me. Saturday night, you go to bed and you think, we're playing Eldon Celtic at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. It's going to be aggressive. It's
In
going to
your
be
mind,
tough. It's going to be It's gonna the atmosphere. It's gonna be There's gonna be animosity on the sides and stuff like that. And you think more about that than thinking, right,
absolutely,
I've got to make sure I get Jack in the right frame of mind. He lacked a bit of confidence last week, and I want to make sure he's working on his left foot this week. Instead, you're thinking, right, I've got to make sure that I hope the referee's waking up this morning and he's had his Weetabix and he's ready to rock and all that kind of stuff. But again, just examples that, and that shouldn't be happening. So in a sense, I want to kind of take the pressure off the coaches. Again, this isn't just from, but if you give the game back to the kids,
It does
again,
that.
and the pressure's not on the kids, because the kids won't feel any pressure. And I just think for everybody and the parents, and we all just turn up and we enjoy it. Like we're going to see a show. You go and see a show to enjoy it. You go and take your kids to the circus to enjoy it. Well, why don't we just go and take our kids to football to enjoy it and just stand back and watch them play. And if you want to have your opinion in the car, then do so. I don't recommend it. But again, that's another story for another day. I can't control what Jimmy and Bobby's daddy say in the car to his kid on the way home. But when we turn up on the grass, I think nice and quiet, let them go in. And don't do it for weeks. Do it all the time. But you and I both know,
Normal.
mission impossible, unfortunately.
Chris, thank you so much. It's never easy kind of stepping out and saying things that maybe not everyone wants to hear. And I know you come from a place because you care about the sport and you love the game, and you want what's best for the kids. And no one's saying what you're right or I'm right or other people are wrong, but let's at least think about this, okay? And we should all be aligned on the fact that the kids should come first. The boys, the girls that are playing football, they should come first. And if we're making choices that don't do that, we need to look at ourselves. Hold on a minute. You know, if making it about me or my hobby or my interest or my ego, then I'm probably getting something wrong here. And if this alone, this episode can get us thinking more about that, then it's a good thing. And what I will say, Chris, is, you know, we get loads of feedback from people on the podcast, listen to the podcast, saying like that, you know, they may have been making some not so great choices, and because of the guests that come on, the things that have been said, now they make better choices, and their players have a better experience because of it. And I'm sure this will be one of those episodes that do the same thing. So, Chris, thank you so much for sharing.
You're welcome, pal. Thank you
Much
for
appreciated.
your time and an opportunity to vent, whatever it is. Like I said, if it changes one mindset, but I really do think it's time to
Just the conversation, right? Just have the
yeah,
conversation.
absolutely.
Don't
Yeah,
change. Just
have
talk
a
about it. Maybe we're
conversation.
wrong.
Have a
Maybe
little
we
Might
change
be a
our
case of
minds.
maybe having a little chat with your parents and going, instead of waiting for the FA to do a silent week, why don't we do one at Beaconsfield, or let's do one at Homer Green, let's do one at Presswood, and see, and then get a and
Or
instead
call
of
the
getting
coach up. the call the coach up in the week and say, look, we're playing you on Sunday or Saturday. How are you getting on? You know, anything we can do to work together on the game day? I know you want to win it. We want to win it too. But how can we make sure it's a great environment for both sets of players and the thing and the parents
and the
as well?
feedback and the bit that frustrated me, and I'll finish on this one. The feedback on the silent weekend, the feedback was asked of the parents' point of view.
Well, it says it all, doesn't it? It's not about the parents. It's not about us. It's about the kids. Ask the kids. Yeah. So, Chris, what about you then? Next, well, A, it's not going to be so long until you're on the podcast again. I promise you that. But how's things looking? Is it just onwards and upwards? Just keep building, keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah, keep doing what I'm doing. Running seven teams on a Saturday.
I can't do one properly.
To be honest, Scott, it's one, I'm looking for someone to come in and run it with me. I'm at that stage now where I'd like to, you know, that you obviously work with Street to Pro. I was speaking to Adam the other day, and congratulations to Adam if he has a listen to this. He's just had a baby
girl
this
week,
so congratulations to him. Just these I'm sure you're aware of FPF. All these big companies are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I've always wanted to try and work on a smaller scale, but if you're going to compete, and unfortunately I'm at the stage now where I have entered the JPL, so I didn't say the word winning, but I have to compete, if that makes sense. And unfortunately you do have to compete, so I'm at the stage now where I probably have to, running seven teams as little Chris Fraser on his own is proving a little bit difficult, but I'm leaning on some fantastic parents who are supporting me. So maybe just looking at finding someone to come in and work alongside me, magically finding a venue that's a little bit bigger. I love the people at Lane End, good morning, good afternoon, whatever it is. The cage at Lane End restricts me with the ages I work with. You know, I work with some of the boys that you're working with now, the likes of Barley and Will and stuff, and you know, boys, I made a mutual kind of decision at the end that the Lane End cage is great. It's intense, it's a good environment, it's got floodlights, the 3G is world class, but is it big enough to translate? You're doing 11v11 now. I think I can translate 6v6 into 7v7 and maybe a small part of 9v9. Yeah. But doing 11v11, you know, principles, passages of play, whatever it is, on a 6v6 football pitch was proving a little bit difficult. But they've spread their wings. They've gone to a far better coach than yourself. So I'm hoping you're seeing the benefits of even the small little things we worked on when these boys were with littles. But yeah, no, FFC hopefully still loving it. The ankles and knees are creaking a little bit. So so maybe need to bring an assistant sooner rather than later. And then I can just be one of those directors of footballs that sits on a lazy boy chair in the corner of the AstroTurf. And
you'll never
back.
Be that
but
person.
No, listen, I, as much as I've grumbled and moaned today, I'm very lucky to work in football, and long may it continue. And I'm definitely going to come over and watch one of your games. It'd be nice to catch up with Will Bayliss alone to find if one thing I miss Will's banter, that's for sure. So I'll look forward to come over and seeing your boys strutting their stuff in the JPL. But yeah, no, thank you very
well,
much.
You're always welcome, Chris,
for having me over. And I'll look forward to the next time where we'll find something less controversial to speak about, hopefully.
Top man. Well, look, you've addressed it perfectly. Thank you so much for being a guest and for your time, mate. Much appreciated. And let's come on in the next few months again and do another topic. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do the new restarts in terms of the throw-ins and kick-ons from the side. I reckon I've got about 9 hours on that one based on the last couple of throw-ins or run-ins from the side. Yeah, we'll do that for
perfect next topic.
Top man.
Take care,
pal. Lovely to speak to you.
Thanks,
buddy. See you soon. Bye, mate. Bye, bye.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.